Box. Office. Refund. Box Office Refund Podcast.
This episode is a repost, and while we don't have that many episodes, maybe you're thinking it's a bit early to already be reposting, this is a fitting holiday movie. And, you know, in essence, it's kind of like Christmas in July when this first aired. Now it's Christmas at Christmas. And the main reason that we're doing a reposted episode is that NaNoWriMo is looming large. As we've mentioned on previous episodes, we are both participating, and one of us is farther behind than the other. I'm going to let you use your context clues to figure out which one that is. New in town. It was recorded a long time before I was the co-host. I'm a bit salty about that. You know, I should have been here in the beginning. I was the missing piece, but I'm glad that that was realized. And I haven't seen this movie, but I did watch the trailer in preparation for this recording. You know, it's the old city girl in the winter story. It's just the type of movie where somebody's out of their element. They act like a moron. It's like, oh, snow. This is so bewildering. Cold climate. Actually, Renee Zellweger plays a smart woman who's an executive at a big company. Did she not check the weather before she went to Minnesota? Did she not prepare at all? Because that's what it seems like. She is bewildered by snow and the cold weather. It's just, it's dumb. And it's like the type of movie where she never realized there were people living differently from her. She just assumed that everybody lived in Miami in warm climates. To her, cold climates are a completely different culture. Harry Connick Jr. shows up in this movie, which is really amazing. I thought his acting ended in the 90s. I didn't know he was still around in the late aughts, but he is. And he always plays the same character. Maybe it just took that long for that same character to come back around. He had to wait, you know, 10 or 15 years. Who knows? Has the man been consistently acting? I'd be curious to know that. I could look it up, but I don't have time because I got to record this right now. But he's the dude that, like, shows up. He's kind of the small-town guy who makes everything okay. That is his role. You know that she hates this town, and she's going to love this town. She's going to have a change of heart. That's how these things go. It's predictable. It's boring. And I'm not going to like it. I'm not going to watch it, but I wouldn't like it anyway. And it doesn't seem like an abject failure. This was the goal. A boring, mundane, dumb movie. Some people like that. I don't. And I'm not calling Renee Zellweger movies boring and predictable and dumb. I would never say that. I would never suggest that her movies are stupid. Wouldn't do it. So this doesn't seem like an abject failure on the surface. I mean, as far as like what their goals are, it does seem like an abject failure as far as making a legitimate movie. I'm not sure you can call this a legitimate movie. It's just, it's a lot of garbage there. You know, you got to wade through a lot of garbage. I don't know. I will say the surprising thing about this movie, I actually looked this up because, you know, I want to be prepared for this. They filmed it in Manitoba. A movie like this, you just assume they're going to be, it's going to be shot in a studio lot with fake snow. They actually went to Manitoba, and the temperatures at times reached negative 50 degrees below. That's crazy. Cameras would stop working because it was so cold. I don't know. I would think, let's put some money into the script, like make sure the script is rock solid instead of, ooh, you know, the script's terrible, but we really want the environment to be authentic. Who knows? Without further ado, I give you the episode where I was not the co-host or even on it at all, New in Town.
Welcome to Box Office Refund, a bi-monthly podcast where a guest and myself, Nico Bell, give low-rated movies a second glance and decide if critics were too harsh or spot on. Today, I'm very excited because I have two guests with me. I have two fellow podcasters and writers, Hannah Davis and Jessica Kate. Hello, how are you guys doing?
Hey, everyone. We're doing great.
Hey.
Well, let me throw this over to you guys so you guys can introduce yourselves and tell a little bit about what you write and about your podcast. So maybe, Jessica, do you want to go first?
Sure. So we co-host the Story Nerds podcast together, where we nerd out over all things stories, books, movies, TV, and I'm an author as well. I write Christian romantic comedies.
Awesome. And Hannah, how about you?
Hey, I'm Hannah. I actually live in Minnesota, and I'm also a contemporary Christian romance author. So Jessica, Kate, and I met at a conference for Christian writers last year.
Awesome. Fantastic. Like they said, they have their Story Nerds podcast, and we will talk more about that and where you can find them online at the end, but first I want to tell you, we watched a romantic comedy called New in Town, and I am so excited to have these two ladies because I know Jessica does romance subplots or full plots. Hannah, do you also dabble in the romance world?
dabble in the romance or full on romance? No, I am full on romance. I actually went into the pool very, very begrudgingly at first. I thought I had wanted to write suspense, and I had a full book plotted out, and started writing it and realized that that was so not the way it was coming out. Like, it sounded way more like romance than suspense. So I kicked and dragged my feet for 7 months before I finally gave in and jumped into the pool of romance. So
I can relate in the exact opposite way. So for listeners, I used to write Christian romance, and that is how I met Jessica Kate, because we were in a boutique group together, and we've known each other for years.
Since the start, pretty much, of my writing journey.
I know, me too. And I just, as I'm sure Jessica can say, I kept killing off my characters and having really depressing plots, and it just did not work.
Awesome stories, but like so much death.
So much death. I was like, you know what? We're just gonna leave this alone. This is not my genre. As much as I love reading it, So I am now in the horror dark fiction world where my little characters can be manipulated and killed off left and right. Nobody cares. It's bad if I don't kill off a main character, so I feel like I'm home.
Yes.
But I was really excited to watch this movie because I've seen it before, and the critics did not love it. That's why we're doing this. Boo. And I feel really awesome that, Hannah, you're a Minnesotan.
Minnesotan.
Yep. There we go. So let's go ahead and jump right into this. It starts off in Minnesota with a bunch of women sitting around scrapbooking and gossiping about how they're going to get a new manager at the plant, which is just a manufacturing plant, and how they are talking about how all the other managers haven't been able to cut it. All the male managers haven't been able to cut it. And then, of course, we flash to Renee Zellweger, who is our heroine in this piece. She is going to step up and be the new plant manager. So, Hannah, as our Minnesota
expert,
just tell me right now, and look, this is a no judgment zone. How many scrapbooks do you own?
You know what's so funny is that I've tried to scrapbook on several occasions. I bought the scrapbook, I bought my paper, I had my photos printed out, and they still remain untouched in somewhere. I think I actually ended up giving it to Goodwill at some point because I just was not doing it. But that being said, I know a lot of other scrapbookers. One of my best friends goes on a biannual scrapbooking retreat. So she goes twice a year up to a camp, and they spend the entire week and scrapbooking, and so it's definitely a thing. I didn't know it wasn't a thing anywhere else until I moved out to California for a short while, but
awesome.
I laughed when I saw this intro because I'm not from Minnesota. I'm from Australia, if you can't tell from my voice, but I think it's also a small town thing because growing up, I lived in a really rural town. I actually lived on a dairy farm half an hour outside the town, and all my aunties were into scrapbooking and heaps of their friends and stuff, and I was only saying to someone the other day, I abhor craft in all its forms, but everybody around me was scrapbooking, and I laughed, and I was like, take the snow away, and it could have been where I grew up as well.
Well, I thought it was a very cute little opening, and then we get into the crux of it, how Renee is this high-powered, rising star in the company that she's working with, and that she ends up kind of drawing the short straw and has to go down to, or I guess up to Minnesota because she's living in Miami, and she has to go up to Minnesota to oversee the downsizing of a manufacturing plant. Hilarity ensues right off the bat. Let me ask you guys, since you guys are my romance novel experts, I have deemed it so therefore it is. What do you think about this setup of Renee Zellweger's character? Did you find it cliche? Did you find it endearing? To the point where she was going to Minnesota and she's dressed
typically my in Miami gear and the skirt, and she opens up the airport doors in Minnesota.
Let's add a few expletives.
Yes. Did you like this sort of heroine, or did you just find it like, oh, it's just another typical romantic heroine that's not very unique? What side of the argument would you guys fall on?
If I can jump in first, it is very, very terrible of me to say, but it's true. I actually really enjoy watching people who are not used to cold climates being forced into the torture of cold climates. And so that opening scene still remains to this day one of my favorites, of when the doors open at the Minneapolis airport and she steps outside in totally unprepared gear. And she gets a really cold blast of winter. And so I thought that was one of the funniest parts. Our family still laughs at that part too. Maybe it's just me, but I love the idea of somebody having to go somewhere else and experience life somewhere else. I think maybe that's just part of my upbringing. I moved around a lot as a teenager. I still consider Minnesota my home state, but I moved around a lot as a teenager and into college. And then after college, I lived in LA for a couple years, and then I moved back to Minnesota. So I love the idea of somebody being forced outside of their comfort zone physically as sure. well as mentally. So I that part I really appreciated.
Sure. What about you, Jess?
Yeah, the part where she walks out the door and it's freezing cold, like, you know, you can tell from the setup what's going to happen, and it's still funny mm-hmm. when it happens. Mm-hmm. Just the way she acts it, it's such a strong reaction, it cracks me up. That was, I have to say, the best part of her intro. I did find Renee Zellweger's character setup extremely cliched, if I put my yeah. author hat on, and also pretty unlikable. I wanted them to give me a reason to be on her side, even though we knew that there'd be a bit of a love-hate thing happening. I still wanted to root for her, but she was late to her work meeting, and they didn't really give a reason why. And she obviously wears completely inappropriate clothes, and you're kind of like, what's the deal with this girl? So yeah. The comedy part there was good, but I did think that they could have easily given us something more to work with.
I agree with that. And when she did show up late to her work meeting, the only reason I could see that she showed up late was because she went for a really long jog. And I was like, well, that's just rude. Like, you have to stop running, get in the shower, get to work on time.
I agree with you. She kind of deserved to be stuck in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when she had all those suitcases, I rolled my eyes there. I was like, oh, that is so cliched. Like, why does a successful woman have to come with 50 million suitcases? And I admit I do overpack continuously, but that's in one suitcase. Like, yeah, I just thought,
it's I feel like, I don't, you know what? I should have checked to see if the writers were male or female, but I feel like there were male writers on this who got kind of lazy. And they were like, let's make her come off as a high power kind of ice queen. And oh, yeah. And the best way to do that is to have her in heels when she goes to Minnesota with her 12-piece matching luggage, you know, because it's been done to death. And I just feel like lazy storytelling. Like, there are other ways, to get across something that has been done, like, so many times before.
And I looked up the year of release. It's a 2009 movie. Yeah. So we're coming. It's not like this is the first time someone's done this. This is coming at the end of the reign of the rom-com, and they should have known better.
Is there a reign of rom-com? Was there an end to it? Whoa. Was there an end to it?
I still enjoy them, but there's not as many box office hits nowadays are rom-coms.
I'll give you that one. Okay.
I do love them still, though.
Well, when she gets there, she meets the local Minnesotan people. And this actually, I found it a little endearing, but also a little unsettling, because in my mind, they overplayed it a little bit too much. You have everybody with their very thick accents, which is fine. Everybody has accents in different places of the world. But you meet Blanche, who's so sweet. Blanche is her assistant, but also going to be her friend. And spoiler alert, she also saves the town inadvertently. And the first part that I kind of cringed on was when they were in the car and she's driving Renee's character's name is Lucy, and they're driving around, and I think they're going to show the new house that Lucy is going to be living in when they're there. And Blanche asks, have you found Jesus? And that was the first time I kind of was like, are they overplaying it? Are they being cliche? Like, so, were you offended by that?
I have to laugh at this, though, because I, being a Minnesotan, you have to understand that part of the extremely rich culture that Minnesota is, is Lutheranism. Like, Minnesota is like the Lutheran capital of the world. And I've, of course, I'm exaggerating that, but only by a little. I certainly don't know anybody who's just going to have that kind of conversation meeting a complete stranger, but it also wouldn't surprise me. So
okay.
having the big Lutheran gathering that, I shouldn't say, having that like Lutheran heritage, definitely, I think that that was their homage and they're like trying to make it very, because yeah. I don't know. Here's the thing that I actually didn't appreciate is that Minnesota is extremely diverse in its people. Minneapolis specifically, at least when I was in college, so that was probably 7 or 8 years ago at this point, but Minneapolis was the world's most diverse city in the world.
Oh, nice.
Really?
Yes. Fun wow. fact. We have a lot of immigrants who've come here from Somalia, from Russia. We have
they
a huge,
did not show that in the movie.
No, we there have a huge no Hmong Somalians. Population, which is an Asian population. And so there's a lot of diversity within Minneapolis itself. And I understand that the movie takes place in rural Minnesota, which that does tend to be a very white dominant culture.
Okay.
It really Swedish is your heritage there. Swedish and Norwegians, those are kind of the two main heritage points. But I would have loved to see a little bit more diversity, especially when they go into the city for doing her hair and makeup, the daughter's hair and makeup, which is such a fun, cute little scene.
Yes.
But that
yes.
was one of my big points. But yeah, that conversation, I just laughed at it mostly because I just thought the Jesus joke was funny. Imagine Jesus missing. I don't know. I think that's hilarious.
It was. I mean, it was cute. It's just, I think I'm a little hypersensitive to it because I am living in the South. And so people just get the wrong impression so much when you bring up like a Jesus joke in a movie that is secular. And true. So like when I was like, I was thinking, oh man, people are going to see that and think that every Christian does that or every Minnesotan does that or, you know, like I just got oversensitive with those type of things, but it was cute. And I did love Blanche and she was adorable the whole entire movie.
She was adorable. I think I wrote in my notes here, small town caricatured, like, yeah, having grown up in a small town, I would have liked to see a bit more depth to their people. It was just like every small town cliche packed into a
movie.
It really was.
And they make them seem a bit dumb, which I always resent that. Now that I've moved to a bigger place and I see the culture clashes, there is definitely like a resistance to change. I think we can all agree that in smaller places. But it doesn't mean that anybody is less intelligent and they always have a tremendous amount of persistence and grit to live in these places that are much harder to live in than the bigger towns. And I feel like that always gets undersold when it's represented in media. Mm-hmm. And so when they always make them come off as dumb, it makes me so annoyed. But yeah, I would have liked to see a bit of a different side to their personalities. Again, they just is a quite a one-dimensional movie in that regard.
Speaking of characters coming off as dumb, our very first image of the wonderful, brilliant Harry Connick Jr., who is our hero, whose name is Ted in the movie, was him sitting on a couch drinking a beer. Lucy Renee Zellweger comes in, and what? I don't know who wrote this. I don't know if it was a Harry's like, this is how I'm going to play this off, guys. I got this. But he spits his beer and it like dribbles down his chin. And I was like, oh, that is not sexy. I am not interested in this man being the hero at all. I was like, who decided that that was going to be how we first meet our hero of the movie? I was like, they couldn't have made it any more ridiculous in my mind. I
fully agree. I think for the purpose of the movie, it was totally one of those things that you definitely could have done without. I understand that the idea is that they need to not get along right away. And that, I think that could have been done totally differently. I do definitely see, I think with the culture of Minnesota though, not to like put any of my rural friends in this bubble because they aren't, but well, I guess I can't say that. I definitely know my
Spill
share
the dirt on your rural friends.
Right. I definitely know my fair share of people who's I don't know. I don't want to say that. I think I'm going to go back on that. But
sorry, we can't edit anything out. Sorry, it's all going in.
Now I'm just, I don't want to get myself into trouble. I feel like this is going to be one of those trouble spots. But
Jess, how did you like Harry Connick Jr. being introduced with the beer bubbling? Like, I don't mind that it's beer. It's just that he's like foaming at the mouth. Oh. It was like they're trying to make him look so incompetent. And it was unnecessary.
I'm gonna be. I'm gonna be the differing opinion. It made me laugh quite a bit.
Really?
I think it's because I am a sucker for anybody like spitting something out of their mouths in surprise. Always really cracks me up. So I agree that it was completely gross, and you were like, ugh. But I felt the laugh value for me made it worth it.
Well, I'm glad someone got enjoyment out of that scene.
I don't remember laughing at all when that part first happened. So, and it has never been funny to me. I don't know why. I think it's gross. I don't think it needed to happen.
I think they could have just moved beyond that to the dinner scene where they start fighting and bickering back and forth because, mm-hmm. of course, Lucy is there to do the downsizing, and Ted is the head of the union rep, so of course they're going to be butting heads the whole entire movie. I feel like we could have just skipped right to that. And so she doesn't know that Ted is the head of the union rep just then. She thinks that Blanche has just set her up to have some fun, mm-hmm. while she's in town, and it isn't until a couple scenes in then Renee finds out that Ted is the head of the union. So I think they did a good job in what the romance world and the writing world calls like a why not why structure, mm-hmm. on all the reasons why not two people should be together, and then all the reasons why they should be together. So we start off with a whole lot of why nots. They're on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of what's going to happen to the jobs. You know, she's from Miami, he's a Minnesota person, and a Minnesota person, as if you guys are like underground people.
Different breed.
The interesting thing is that we learn he is not a native born Minnesotan.
Yes,
so.
You're right. That's right. Yes, his backstory, of course, is that his wife got sick and they moved there.
That's one of my
close to the Mayo Clinic. Mayo Clinic. Right.
That's one of my biggest pet peeves in the whole movie, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
Really? Okay. So basically what happens is there's a lot of tug back and forth between the two of them. There's a lot of kind of funny scenes. We have the foreman who kind of messes around with Lucy and gets her to give everybody a day off for something called Gopher Day, which doesn't exist.
Messes around as in, like, plays some practical jokes, not, like, the other messes around.
Yes, they play a lot of practical jokes on Lucy. Let's see. We have the scene where Ted kind of becomes like a hero. He saves her from when she is driving in her car and it's a blizzard. She skims off the road and lands into a snowbank and she's stuck there. And Ted is the one who comes by and saves her. So I found Ted to be a very likable hero. I liked his backstory. Mm-hmm. I liked pretty much everything about him. I never really liked Lucy, and I never really saw them together, which was my biggest pet peeve with this movie. I never really got a reason why Lucy is good for Ted. I know why Ted would be good for Lucy, but not back and
not
forth.
Not the other way around.
Not the other way around.
100%. And that, I think, is the biggest reason why this movie copped so much criticism, because Lucy is completely unlikable. I've got like a whole list of notes here, and it's not until that scene where he pulls her out of the snowbank, and by then she started drinking alcohol to keep warm and is completely smashed.
Yes,
and she then like falls off the porch and stuff, and that's funny.
Yes.
So I did not really enjoy the movie until that point. And before that, which is like a good 40 minutes or so,
You
just have a really long list of reasons to not like Lucy's character. Like, her behavior at that first dinner party, she was just straight up rude and insulting to, mm-hmm. like, their entire culture.
Yes.
And it didn't make sense why she didn't know. Like, Blanche should have told her he was the union rep. That part didn't even make sense why she wouldn't tell her that.
Yeah.
And they make her use big words that just don't even, like, it doesn't even sound logical. I work in a corporate environment, okay? And yes, there are some big words, but they're not used the way that she is doing it.
Yeah.
And it was just, Yeah, it was the whole movie. You were like, why is Renee Zellweger any, like, not her personally, but why is Lucy any good? She's just mean and insulting.
See, I agree and I disagree with that. I think you got it perfectly right for the first half of the movie. She is mean and insulting, and she comes off as very more important than the rural folk of Minnesota. But I also think that two things. One, you really see her start to form serious relationships with the people of Minnesota. She starts to realize that these people are kind and loving, and so she really starts reciprocating that in certain ways. And I also think that this movie was and does reflect a very real mindset of people who are on big cities versus people who live in rural areas. And I think for that reason, it made sense for her character to come off that way. You know, I'm not saying that everyone comes from a big city is like that, and I know that because I live A, in Minneapolis, and B, I used to live near Los Angeles, so I'm not saying that every single person from a big city has that same mentality, but it's very real, and I've seen it.
It is, yeah.
And so I think that it really, that was something that I get, like, you in a romance, you really want to like your character from the beginning, but I get for the purposes of the movie, it made sense for her character to be rude and awful. And so what I really appreciated was her mentality shift through the movie. We always talk about a character's change. There should always be a change from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie. And her big change is really her mindset about what's important in life. Real corporate environment or family of a small town. And that's something that I appreciated halfway through, when you really start seeing Lucy kind of taking that turn and saying, oh, these people really are great and they're hardworking and I want the best for them. And I think that's why Harry Connick Jr.'s character falls in love with her, is because he sees that. And
I don't.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think there was enough examples of it. Mm-hmm. And I think the example that they showed that made me cringe was on Valentine's Day, when they had the Valentine's Day dance. So Harry Connick Jr. is a single dad and his daughter is going to a Valentine's Day dance. She's a teenager. This leads to the funniest moment, by the way. But he does. Okay, first of all, they made him the incompetent single dad. Can we please stop making men incompetent? They can do anything. Like, they can raise a girl, but they made him incompetent. They made him buy her some, you know, quote unquote ugly dress, and he's brought her to the beauty parlor and she came away with an ugly perm. So
I don't fault Harry Connick on that, by the way, or his character, by the way. That's totally the hairstylist's fault. Like, every hairstylist should know by 2010, a perm is just not a good idea.
A perm is not a good idea. I love that. But then, you know, Lucy steps up to plate because nobody else really knows how to handle the situation. And we see Lucy take over, and she gets to use all of her city smarts by being the person that brings the daughter to the beauty parlor in the city and buys her a really pretty dress and buys her high heels. And so I didn't love that that was what they did. Like, that was the action.
Yeah.
That they used to show that Renee Zellweger's character was changing. Oh, great. She knows how to make a teenage girl look pretty. Like, very surface level stuff. But, and I'm sure you guys can agree, the funniest moment was when Harry Connick Jr.'s daughter's date comes to the door. Yes. And he is interrogating her. And the date's like, whoa, she looks hot. And he's like, the hell she does. And then the best line is, whatever you do to my daughter, I do to you. I love that line. I thought it was the best line of the entire movie.
Yeah.
See, you just love his character. It's so endearing.
I do really love Harry Connick Jr.'s character. That is totally true. Except for my favorite part is actually after that, when he feigns a heart attack and he's so stressed out and he's like falling over on the stairs and he's going, oh, I feel like my legs are going numb and my fingers, I can't feel my face and I think I'm having a heart attack. And I think that's my favorite moment, which is just seconds so later. But yes, great, great moments.
I love that whole part. Harry Connick Jr. is like completely my dad. I haven't had any specific stories. Thankfully, any dates I've had have been respectful and not earned his wrath. But that's why the whole thing made me laugh, because his reaction was so funny. I think Harry Connick Jr. pulled it off perfectly.
It was great.
Oh, it was so funny. And the panic attack, yes, that was all, it made me laugh because, and even the whole incompetent dad thing, I love seeing competent dads. That's something I like to write about. But I also did think that, yeah, if my mum wasn't around, then that could completely be my dad. And the whole thing was very believable to me.
It was cute. I thought he did a great job acting it. I thought it was very, very cute. And again, like, we just like him even more and more.
Yeah.
And then we get to the moment where we sort of learn about their pasts. And I believe this is what the writers were trying to do to make Lucy mm-hmm. a likable character. We learned that she went to the factory with her dad. Her dad was in a factory worker, and she describes how everyone came to her dad and asked questions about how things worked. And then she found out her dad was a maintenance worker, not the head of it. And so he imparted the words of wisdom that you should work hard, go to school, get an education, mm-hmm. and run the place.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a sense that that is why she's so driven and kind of icy. And then we also learn the backstory of Ted and that his wife died. Now, Hannah, you said
this is the one part that I wish that they could have changed, because they made the setting in New Ulm, Minnesota. They actually didn't film in Minnesota. They filmed in Canada, which is pretty typical. But they made it set in New Ulm. Now, New Ulm is actually on the southwestern side of Minnesota. So it's about an hour to two, I would say closer to 2 hours. It's about an hour, 45 minutes. Of a drive, and that's on good roads. Now, you have to understand Minnesota roads in the winter, to go those roads from like New Ulm to Rochester are horrible roads. And it makes no sense to me when he says, oh yeah, it's just a few miles down the road. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not even close. No. I'm even better off living somewhere in the cities. In the Twin Cities area than you would be to be over in New Ulm. Like, there's plenty of other small towns to choose from that make more sense to a Minnesotan. So that's the one huge, like, that's the biggest pet peeve of the entire movie. And every time I hear that, I like almost have to close my ears just to ignore it.
Oh, so you had like an actual problem, like just believability.
Exactly. If they could have just chosen any other town, like Dover or Eota are both like just suburbs of Rochester, if you will. Like even in the major metro area, it would make more sense for him to move to a metro area than it would be for him to like try to find a job in a super small rural area. The only thing that I could think of is, like, maybe his wife had a family connection there, but they don't introduce that. And, like,
You're really trying to wrap these together.
So I wish that they would have just chosen any other town other than New Ulm, something that makes more sense than something that far away. So that's my biggest pet peeve of the whole movie.
Well, hey, if that's your biggest pet peeve, then I would say
I think it's a great movie. I love this movie. Such a fun chick flick for me.
I was going to say, I didn't mind this scene, but this softer side of Renee Zellweger is something that I wanted to see hints of earlier.
Yeah.
I think I wouldn't have minded all her bad sides earlier if they had have also given me hints that these other sides were there, some other reason to really like her despite her flaws. So I wish they had have introduced a little bit more about that.
Kind of going off on top of that, though, I want to say that I get that. You do want to see that, but at the same time, like, having to move to many other cities and have, like, I've had that homesick feeling, like, right before she flies up for Thanksgiving and it's just a rough time and she's struggling. She's like, I'm going home. It's going to be a good day. And then her flights get canceled and that's when she ends up in the ditch after she swerves to not hit a cow, which, by the way, can totally happen because I know many, many farmers whose cows accidentally get loose. And so I'm pretty sure, Jessica, Kate, your dad's a farmer, right? Does that happen to you too?
Yeah. I grew up on dairy farms and the cows would get out all the time.
I love that you two are trying to make this movie better by finding reason and logic in it. Good for you two, seriously. Because I had issues. I don't know if you guys noticed, but Ted, the character, was still wearing his wedding ring. And we find out
6 years.
6 years. So if we're talking believability, I don't think this is a man looking to fall in love with anybody.
Yeah.
He still has his wedding ring on. So, but again, it makes you like Ted more because he's, you know, very loyal to his wife. But anyway, so we can kind of move to the big problem, which is she has to do her layoffs and she doesn't want to. But Blanche finds out that she is doing layoffs. They have a falling out. She has a falling out with Ted. Then it becomes up to Lucy to figure out a way to save everybody, which she does. How does Lucy save everybody? Why
not write that? She saves the town with the tapioca recipe. So she takes Blanche's tapioca recipe and she's able to create like a big gigantic like trial, and that's what they're going to sell.
Blanche's tapioca recipe, that's right. So instead of doing any other thing for the manufacturing companies, they end up buying, so she buys the plant, is that right? And then she's going to sell it back to the workers?
I think that's
at the very end, that's kind of how it happens. They sell the tapioca recipe to the plant she had worked for, or the company she had worked for, and then that company decides to sell the plant and the recipe to another business, and so they decide. At that point, she comes back and she's going to come back as that company CEO, and they're going to buy the plant from the company she used to work for. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I have two questions for you. Number one, when you're thinking about like making out with your dream man, do you often envision doing it at your workplace with like 100 workers, just all?
But here's I know that this is like, this is me trying
to
defend it.
Are you going to defend this? Please defend this when Lucy and Ted had to make out in front of all the workers.
But that plant is like a family at that point, so it only kind of makes sense.
Okay. Hannah, do you dream of making out with your
dad? No, the answer is no, I wouldn't.
Your family members.
Oh, man. Okay, so I have to say, yeah, that's weird. However, I also think it's like a movie trope that I don't mind. The Proposal, one of my all-time favorite movies, ends the same way at the publishing house. And I don't know, for the purposes of the story, everybody kind of gets closure because all the people that care about them know that now they're going to be all right. But yeah, it would be weird if it was reality. And it leads me back to another point from earlier, halfway through the movie when they have their first kiss. It made me laugh so hard because they've been so strict on the daughter about her coming home at curfew, and she comes home early and busts them making out.
Yeah.
And they hear her coming, so they quickly like try and look really innocent. And the dad's move, Harry Connick Jr. trying to turn the telly on and not quite make it in time, and like accidentally throwing the remote across the room.
I love that.
Look at his face. Oh, that was one of the funniest moments.
That's like one of those moments that I couldn't stand. Like, especially how she just like.
Oh, really?
What?
I loved it.
Apparently, we think completely opposite about this movie, but that's I really didn't love how Lucy just like moves in on him, and I feel like I'm like, shouldn't you get like a look or so, like maybe, like I feel like you just attacked him, like
that part was
needs to be a little bit like, you know,
bold.
In the movie Hitch, where it's like, you know, it's like a 60-40 or 90-10 kind of like
90-10.
There needs to be a little bit of movement on his side before she just goes and attacks him. Like,
she was 100%.
They had just been talking, and so for her to just go from like kind of a building relationship to all of a sudden like kissing him was a little, I just couldn't stand. I really don't like that scene. I don't think that she is good enough at that point to kiss him. So
there we go. All right.
It's more the aftermath that I love.
That's true. The aftermath is indeed funny.
Okay. Second question. Do you guys love flashback montages where you get to see the happy couple relive their relationship? Because I don't, and there was one in this, and I thought, so she goes back to Miami before the very final end, and, you know, he is very sad in Minnesota missing her, and she is in Miami missing him, and eventually she'll come back and save the day, but of course, like, she's running, and, you know, you think in montages, obviously, so she's imagining all the fun different things that they've had together. I thought that was pretty cheesy. I think they could have taken that out, but maybe, I don't know, maybe some people enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did not. The thought didn't hit me that it was cheesy, but I did wonder to myself as I watched it, did they decide at the end that the movie was too short and so they decided to reuse footage
from
had to
old,
stretch it.
Because it was the exact same scene of her running. Like, I think it was the same footage of her running at the start of the movie. And I normally don't notice these things. But yeah, I was like, they didn't reshoot that. That's the same running footage. And like, that's just lazy. And so then I was like, did they run short and they had to add that in? Why didn't they make her wear a different jumper or something? Like, so
I think that was the, it was easy to tell that they shot that on the same day. They basically just took the same footage and redid it again. Like, that was, that's like one of my things. I think what I would have appreciated more is, like, if they're going to include the montage, like, literally have it happen on the airplane when she's headed out. Because I feel like those are moments when I've left on airplanes and I've had to leave friends and family behind. That's the exact moment as I'm staring out the window and I'm looking down at the ground and I'm like, I know you're right there and we're, you know, 700 yards away at the moment, but, you know, I'm like maybe a quarter mile up in the air, but I miss you so much. And I know I'm leaving and that would have been much more effective to use the montage there. But I think the placement of the montage bothered me more than anything. I think that the montage was cute. I kind of am, you know, in the same lines as Jessica. I think it's one of those tropes that I don't mind. I didn't love it. I don't think it added anything to the movie. So I think that that was the key for me.
I'd rather see, like, well, a memento from their time, or she sees something that reminds her of Minnesota and she gets sad. Or, like a
there's a better way to make her.
Yeah,
it felt lazy.
That would be good. Yeah. Well, the critics did not love this movie. It got a 5.6 on IMDb. It got a 29% on Rotten Tomatoes. Roger Ebert gave it 2 stars, said it was a rom-com with no ambition, not good.
Yeah.
No ambition, not good. Now, I will say this. I've been kind of ragging on this, but I think that people in general do not realize how hard it is to write a good romance because they feel, or, you know, write one in a book or write one on the screen because they feel like it is following a formula and that anybody can do it. And as someone who has written romance and talking to 2 romance writers, I'm sure we can all agree that it is not easy to put together a believable romance. It is not. Like, sure, you do know certain things are going to happen. But to make it believable, like the things we've talked about, it is very, very difficult. So, yes, the critics didn't love it, but I do feel sometimes they were a little harsh on it because it is a very, it's challenging,
I think that for me to really analyze a movie, I need to look at its intentions. Now, this movie was not going to be an Oscar winner. We all know that. And so by this, I think that's what I get really annoyed with in ranking systems by critics because they're ranking it based on, like, a 5-point scale. And we all know a rom-com just isn't going to win an Oscar. And so they're not going to get a 5-star review. So I think it did what it set out to do. It was a cute romance that we believed and we laughed at. It was definitely comedy. So I think that at the end of the day, it accomplished its deed. Now, and also coming from a Minnesotan, I have to admit that, like, I love this movie more for all the Minnesota tropes that are in there that make me laugh than I probably do for the romance. I think if I wasn't from Minnesota, I wouldn't like it as much. So that very well could be a factor.
Yeah. I mean, my opinion is, I mean, anybody who creates something I think deserves an applause. It is hard, like you said, to make anything. So I hate to criticize anyone too much. Like, they tried. I don't think they did hit the mark, but at least they tried. And they made something that did entertain me for 2 hours. Like, I walk away from the movie with a smile on my face. I like the second half a lot better than I like the first half of the movie. My final thing was I liked that it was a location-based. I'd like to see more movies
that are location-based
and culture shocks because you learn. I like to learn about the thing that you're watching. And so I know a lot more about Minnesota. I mean, the first time I watched it, I was actually visiting Minnesota with another friend, and they used it to show me what it was like there in winter. So that was really cool. I learned lots about the culture, and that was really fun. So big points on them for that. But my final ranking was pretty much that it was a much less good Sweet Home Alabama. Sweet Home Alabama did the same thing but did it well. They showed, they taught you about where she was from, but they didn't just have the funny love triangle and love-hate romance between Reese Witherspoon and the guy whose name is escaping me right now. They didn't just have that. They had a complicated relationship with her parents, and they really went into the complexity of the relationship that she has between her old home small town and the big city life that she always wanted, and that feeling she had that she needed to see the world, and the feeling that she'd had when she was younger that she was trapped. But now that she's been out and she's seen it, she can think about maybe going home. And that is a complicated topic, one that I can relate to, having lived on a smaller scale, lived in a small place, now in a bigger place, but not the big city.
Sure.
So, yeah, it had, that movie had depth on a lot of layers. I really liked the complicated relationship she had with her mum in that movie. It really, that story had purpose and depth, and it wasn't just one goofy escapade after another. And I felt that, yeah, this movie, it was fun to watch, but it was kind of a series of goofy things, and it was one-dimensional compared to Sweet Home Alabama. But I still walk away with a smile on my face.
Sure. It had an $8 million estimated budget. Do you guys want to guess if it made back its money on opening weekend? Do you think it made back its money?
I'd say that if it were, if I don't think it did, but I'd say that if Minnesota were the entire nation, it would have.
Well, it actually did really good. It was released February 1st, 2009. It got $6.7 million on opening weekend. It did fantastic throughout the world. It was filmed in Winnipeg, other parts of Canada, like you mentioned, LA and Miami. And it was filmed under the title Chilled in Miami, which I'm glad they changed it. I don't think it would have done right. The tagline also was not that great. The tagline is, she's an executive on the move, but her career is taking her a little farther than she expected. Taglines are hard. Taglines are hard. Didn't really love that one, though. But, you know, what would you guys say, just in closing, what would you say is your favorite romantic comedy? Do you have one?
The Proposal.
You should have prepared us for this question, because I could list off a good 10 right now. Okay, yeah, just go ahead. You said The Proposal. What is it about The Proposal that you love so much compared to all the others?
Well, like I said, it's just such a good love-hate story. I mean, we've talked on our podcast about every writer, and but I think every viewer as well, has a thing that they love. It's in all their favorite shows, movies, books. And mine is loyalty despite conflict, or like a begrudging respect, love-hate sort of stuff. And The Proposal is just the best example of it, because even though they hate each other, they do have Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock's characters have a real loyalty towards each other, and they actually work quite well as a team. But they also really hate each other, and I find that hilarious and explored well throughout the whole movie. And that's something that I like to see. And that's another reason why I love Sweet Home Alabama. That's probably my number two. Because, yeah, it just does that so well and so funny.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
The one I
always go back to, no matter what happens, is While You Were Sleeping, which is an old 90s film with Sandra Bullock and, trying to think of his, Bill Pullman, thank you. And Peter Gallagher plays Bill Pullman's brother. And so I don't know what it is about that movie that keeps me coming back, but I love Sandy B. She's one of my faves, and so
it's my Christmas movie. I watch it every Christmas.
I watch it like all year round. this is my all year round go to. Just need a good chick flick kind of movie. I love the quotes. It's so perfectly quotable. You know, these mashed potatoes are so creamy. such great like little one-liners and tidbits in there. But I think what I really loved about While You Were Sleeping is the aspect of family, which I think you can kind of tie into New in Town too, because really it's like she doesn't have a family and she's coming to this small town and she becomes a part of this great family. And I think that's what I really loved about While You Were Sleeping too, is that at the end of the day, like, Sandy B just needed some fam and she found them kind of by accident. So
yeah
awesome. Well, my favorite romance relationships is in Gone with the Wind with Rhett Butler. And it shouldn't really surprise anyone that they don't get together at the end. And obviously that is my favorite, because that is the type of person I am. Because I feel like it's so realistic. But if I had to pick like a rom-com, I would do probably Sleeps in Seattle, which was always been
I could go with all of these.
Perfect. Well, final question. Did you guys think that the critics were too harsh or spot on with this movie?
I think that for the amount of talent, like, it had big names in it, I think it should have been a lot better than it was. And I think the harshness came from that they didn't meet expectations. Had they had less famous people in it, then people probably would have shrugged their shoulders and gone, oh yeah, it's cute. It's not A grade, but it's cute.
I can actually kind of agree with that. I definitely don't think that it was the best romantic comedy in the world. I think that there were some aspects of believability and likability problems that kind of obviously I definitely agree with, especially in the first half. But at the end of the day, the Minnesotan in me just absolutely loves this movie.
Love it.
I mean, anywhere, one of my favorite parts of the whole movie was a deleted scene, and I wish they would have kept it in because it was so funny.
I'm sorry, does that mean you own the DVD to this?
I do! I love this movie! It's so Minnesota!
I watched this on Google Play, so I don't have access to deleted scenes. Tell me what happened.
This deleted scene takes place somewhere around the time where she goes out on the ice to go fire Stu, mm-hmm. who's one of the main plant workers, and he's out ice fishing. Now, if you live in the upper half of the United States or Canada, you understand ice fishing is a thing, but for a lot of people, they have no clue that this is a reality. Like, we drive out into the lake. Yes, I have driven my car out into the lake. and you fish from the ice. You sit on the ice, whether it's like people build actual huge ice houses that are warm and are like legit houses, very, very tiny houses, but they're very warm and nice. And or you can go like put a pop-up tent. But she goes out into the ice, and it's completely unrealistic because the laws of physics do not react the same way that this car is going. But it just makes me laugh hysterically because you see her lose complete control of her car on the ice, and she just spins and spins and spins and ends up hitting the cop.
Oh, okay.
And it just, I just remember, like, at the first time I watched it, I was busting out laughing, and later on I showed the movie to my family and I showed them that deleted clip, and we actually, every time we watch this now, we will go back during that part of the movie, go back to the main menu, open up the deleted scenes, and watch that deleted scene, and then move forward from there.
Oh my goodness gracious. All right, well, let's do some, what are the promotions?
Woo-hoo!
Okay, if people want to find you online, if they want to learn more about your podcast or you as individuals, where can people find you? Let us start with Hannah this
time. Hey, so you can find me on Instagram. That's probably where I'm most active. It's at Hannah Davis Author. I think Hannah D. Author. I have to check that out.
I'm on
Instagram the most, and Facebook too, so you can always find me there. But like Jess said, we both host a podcast called Story Nerds. And so we can be found on Twitter and on Facebook, and our podcasts are out on a number of different platforms. So I'll let Jess tell you about where to find those, because I'm trying to remember the names of what we call ourselves on each of them.
Perfect.
So you can find Story Nerds on Facebook at facebook.com/storynerds. We do 2-minute intro videos, and then we have links to the longer podcast from there. Our podcast is available on Stitcher and iTunes and most apps. And we are on Twitter at Story Nerds. Sorry, I'll say that again.
Story Turds.
We're on Twitter.
That's a different podcast.
Yeah. We're on Twitter at StoryNerds_chat. And me individually, you can find me on Facebook at Jessica Kate Writing. Or I have a website, jessicakatewriting.com. And I'm on Twitter at JessicaKate05.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
So you can something to just mention too. Our last podcast that just dropped, although I don't know how many are going to be in between here and your post.
Probably really.
One of our most recent podcasts, we talked to the author Melissa Tagg. So if you are a reader of Christian fiction, we were able to talk to her about classic movies, which was such a blast for me. And we kind of got a little update about Melissa's life too and where she's at in writing. So it's super exciting. And we just lined up a couple of awesome special guests. So if you want to know who those special guests are, you definitely will have to tune in. The next couple episodes, we'll let you know who those are.
Look, even if you're not a fan of Christian writing, because this, you know, I do horror and dark fiction now. Good writing is good writing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like go check out these ladies. Go check out what they're doing. Go check out their podcast. You can find me at Nico Bell Fiction. Please go to iTunes and leave a review. And thank you for joining us today. Tune in again in 2 weeks when we'll have a new guest and a new B-movie. All right. Thank you, ladies, so much. I hope you'll come back sometime.
Definitely. Lots more to talk about.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Box. Office. Refund. Box Office Refund Podcast.